Hello and welcome to Pain Speak, the podcast it doesn't hurt to listen to. Your host, Dr. Deepak Ravindran, has over 20 years of experience treating patients with acute and persistent pain and has been an NHS consultant for more than 10 years. He is a fellow of the Faculty of Pain Medicine at the Royal College of Anaesthetists and holds qualifications in both musculoskeletal and lifestyle medicine. Dr. Ravindran is currently the clinical lead for pain medicine at the Royal Berkshire Hospital. The doctor will see you now.
Hello, and welcome back to this episode of the Pain Speak podcast. In this episode, I'm going to continue with some of the questions that have been asked of me in the first week since the release of my book, The Pain-Free Mindset. And I'm going to go direct into the next question that was asked. I just ended the last episode with talking about trauma-informed practice. And actually, one of the questions was, what does trauma-informed practice mean? And I talk about going upstream quite a lot. And what does that mean? Well, to me, a lot of the problems I see in my pain clinic are downstream effects, meaning that patients often come to me and pain patients often do not even know about the existence of a pain clinic or a pain consultant until 3 or 4 years in their journey of struggling with pain. And if that's you, it would very well resonate with you that you might have seen GPs, you might have then gone around spending a few sessions with physiotherapists, then you might think, well, that you have no other option but to go down a surgical route. And you might even have had a few surgeries depending on which area of the body was affected. And finally, somebody might tell you, well, you need to go to the pain clinic. And that's when you'd be seeing someone like me for the first time. So I'm downstream. And then if I have to start talking to you about the numerous ways in which you could have managed your pain very differently and overcome it much earlier in the journey, you, like so many of my patients have told me, would be saying, well, why did I not know this earlier? And that's what I mean by actually wanting to go upstream. And this feeling of wanting to go upstream is not just in the pain clinic as far as pain is concerned, but it can mean in a lot of context of wanting to actually go further up the chain of events to see how far early we can intervene to make a difference and change the trajectory of people. This might be very relevant with regards to trauma-informed practice because we realize that when people undergo a traumatic experience, the earlier in their life they have that experience, it impacts on their developing immune and nervous systems. And changes that happen in the immune and nervous system in the teenage years or in their young ages can often spill over into multiple organ systems in their 20s or 30s, and that can cause problems with their medical health. That can cause patients to sometimes undergo or undertake risky behaviors which undermine their health. And so these need to be tackled early on. These need to be recognized early on, and this is happening. The concept of adverse childhood experiences, the concept of trauma that occurs during somebody's health in their adulthood, it might be a road traffic accident, it might be bullying, it might be divorce, it might be the death of your spouse or your child, or illness in your child, can all be forms of trauma that will have an impact on your nervous system and immune system. So trauma-informed practice means a healthcare professional is aware that you might have undergone some trauma, that it is very possible that you may have a response to it when you then enter into a healthcare setting, and that a healthcare professional like myself will have to respond to it, will have to recognize it, and actually make sure that we do not re-traumatize you. And those are the few principles of trauma-informed care that I talk about and I practice in my pain service.
This is Pain Speak with Dr. Deepak Ravindran.
The next question is around long COVID and whether my book covers that long COVID and whether long COVID itself is different from other viruses. Well, long COVID has actually been an interest of mine from probably June of last year, 2020. And it was just when I was recovering from COVID myself and had gone back to work, and I was starting to see more and more patients and literature talking about the phenomenon of patients who have had mild to moderate COVID, who have been in the community, but are struggling with symptoms that have far exceeded the 2 or 3 weeks that a viral infection should normally stay. And these numbers were increasing, and there were lots of stories about not just in hospital patients. We expected patients who have been in ICU or in hospital to feel worse, but this was patients in the community who had not much symptoms to start with, or who might have had symptoms for a couple of weeks, having then a post-viral fatigue or sometimes something much worse than that. And over the year, we've understood that the term long COVID, as it is called, or post-COVID syndrome, as it is called in the UK, can affect multiple organ systems, can be actually a constellation of signs and symptoms that seem to come from 4 different areas. You could have long COVID because you have an organ problem. You might have had some heart or lung disease or condition actually that is affecting the structure there. You might have a typical or what is known as a post-viral fatigue-like picture, which is sometimes seen in other conditions like ME and chronic fatigue, and even painful conditions like fibromyalgia, where there is a combination of symptoms. Then there is another group of long COVID, which is, I think, the biggest, is that group of patients who have had mild symptoms initially, but then are left with varying, fluctuating, intermittent symptoms affecting many organ systems, like palpitations or orthostatic POTS-like syndrome, tachycardia, where your heart rate is much more rapid and you have changes in posture. You might have shortness of breath and dizziness. You might have brain fog. You might have other organ system impacts like your tummy upsets or runny nose or diarrhea, loss of smell or taste. All of these can be seen within long COVID. And at this time, when I look abroad and I look overseas, people are talking about treatments with antiviral drugs, or they're talking about treatments with other conditions, other drugs that have been used for some other conditions, like ivermectin, which is an antiparasitic drug. But the reality is that right now the evidence for many of these drugs is still being researched. There's not enough to say that they can be given safely to entire populations. And with almost 10% of the population possibly struggling from long COVID, we do need some good quality treatments. But at this time, in the absence of medications or interventions, we really have to then focus on the other aspects, the N, the D, the S, the E, and the T, which is where I think the pain-free mindset can be used even in the context of long COVID, because it pays attention to all those therapies which are still important. And when you do get an M, a medication that does make a difference, then you can just fit it right in with the rest of the therapies that you're doing, but you're not going to be losing out by not bringing in all those principles of management. Another question was asked is, what do I think is the biggest cause of pain in this generation and in millennials? That's been a tough one, I must say. And I think there are, again, as with this, a few reasons, but I'm just going to probably say our response to stress of a variety of different kinds is probably a big one. I don't deny, I probably think the digital mediums and social media do have a role to play. The cancel culture and all the other are going to be emblematic of that constant stress. Then there are lifestyle factors, you know, the amount of processed foods that we've been having, the physical activity that has been reduced because of either working from home or the relative sedentariness or the isolation and lockdown-like factors. And all of this then brings about this possibility of disturbed sleep. Again, it might be because of excessive entertainment use, binge watching, all of this could affect your sleep cycles. But if it is going to come down to causing pain, then I think, first of all, understanding pain, rethinking pain, as I talked about in the last episode, and actually knowing that it is complex, but then 80% of it is under your control. So there is hope and there is change that's possible, but it is first understanding the complexity. And without that, it is going to be a big reason for pain in millennials.
This is Pain Speak.
Another question was then, who are the target readers for this book? Well, I primarily wrote it for patients in pain. Each chapter has got a variety of quizzes to help patients like yourself understand what you might have done up to now to manage your pain and what are the drawbacks or what can be the gaps. And if you're able to work through the book alongside reading it, you will be able to find a plan for yourself, things that you have done, things you've not done, things you could have done different or better. And all of that is very useful. So it's been very much tailored to the patient in pain. And if you know someone who's in pain, then I think this would be an ideal primer to actually get on that path of understanding how to take back control and overcome pain. But what I've been really happy and pleasantly surprised and delighted is the response from a variety of healthcare professionals who have read and fed back to me. And it looks like this is something that I hope will become almost necessary reading for a lot of healthcare professionals. And it's heartening to know that a lot of my colleagues have said that this is not the information that they would have had even in their undergraduation or post-graduation around pain management. So in that sense, I do feel that there seems to be enough in this book even for healthcare professionals to understand about the state of pain neuroscience. And it seems to give them all they need to look after a patient in pain. In the next episode, I'm going to be looking at a few more questions and asking that question, have I really trashed all drugs and injections and surgeries? Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pain Speak podcast. I hope you found it enjoyable. This is your host, Dr. Deepak Ravindran, signing off now. I'll see you then in the next episode.